His letter is dated January 7, 1976. Dear Mr. Conlon, your letters of December 5, 1975 to Miss Mary Barrow and to Mr. Art Bentley, both of Lake Havasu City, Arizona, have been sent to me for comment. To that end, I write direct to you with copies to them and other interested parties. In your letter to Miss Barrow, you state, among other things, that, quote, grand juries are impaneled to investigate criminal wrongdoing, unquote, and that if, quote, you personally have evidence of crimes committed in connection with our nation's gold holdings, please let me know so that I can put you directly in touch with appropriate officials of the United States Justice Department who would have jurisdiction in this matter, unquote. In your letter to Mr. Bentley, you state, among other things, that while you have, quote, some misgivings, unquote, about the gold situation, quote, I can assure you that exposure to any radioactive poison would have caused me serious illness. Neither I nor anyone else who went to Fort Knox has suffered any such illness, unquote. Please allow us, firstly, to answer your letter to Mr. Bentley. It is common knowledge in nuclear medicine that if one is exposed to alpha particle radiation of plutonium, death due to cancer can come in a matter of months or years. It all depends upon dosage level and duration of exposure. In this respect, we would suggest that you contact Dr. John Goffman, former professor of medical physics emeritus, University of California at Berkeley, or listen to him by way of a one-hour tape cassette obtainable from Audio Books Incorporated, Post Office Box 16428, Fort Worth, Texas, 76133, special tape number 2 for $6 postpaid. In this tape, Dr. Goffman speaks on the effects of radioactive poison, among other things. In addition, over 18% increase in cancer deaths in the first 7 months this year over last year has taken place in the central eastern states, which has left medical authorities in the dark as to the cause. They felt they had made such tremendous cancer advancements in the last few years, and then to have such a high upsurge in the first 7 months this year over last year in that area alone is baffling. One more thing about this radioactive poison in the United States Bullion Depository at Fort Knox, hereinafter called Fort Knox. We know from sources in the intelligence industry that this plutonium poison was part of the plutonium-239 stolen by members of the intelligence community in 1966, and that this most deadly substance was processed in four plants, two in Kentucky, one in North Dakota, and one in California, into radioactive liquid poison. It was then taken, 60 pounds each, to Peru, Panama, Bolivia, and Argentina under cover of a multinational cement corporation by a CIA officer, Harold Leroy White, for the sole purpose of threatening to contaminate the United States planned and built water aqueduct systems in those countries for political and economic pressure. 60 pounds, however, intended for use in Argentina, was brought back by Mr. White and placed in the central core vault at Fort Knox, where it has been stored ever since late 1968. The casks are now corroding, causing leakage and contamination over the entire areas east and southeast of Kentucky and as far away as Cuba. This contamination is endangering the lives of over 40 million people in this country. Can we afford to allow these people to be expendable? The federal government has now publicly admitted our charges that opium and morphine, 150,000 pounds and 24,000 pounds respectively, are stored at Fort Knox. Why will it not admit the existence of the plutonium? It is suggested that to do so might subject the government to thousands of legal actions involving hundreds of millions of dollars under the Federal Tort Claims Act and or the Price-Anderson Act, the 1954 Atomic Energy Act as amended, Title 42, Section 2011 and following, for, quote, extraordinary nuclear occurrence, unquote. That is, quote, any event causing a discharge or dispersal of source, special nuclear, or byproduct material from its intended place of confinement in amounts off-site or causing radiation levels off-site, and which has resulted or will probably result in substantial damages to persons off-site or property off-site, unquote. And why will it not admit the loss of our gold reserves? For the same reasons. Legal actions, including those criminal in nature. And in the latter connection, we would like here to pursue your suggestion to Mrs. Barrow and list the charges of the high crimes committed relative to disappearance of the people's gold reserves. On behalf of the American people, it is herein charged that the United States Treasury Department, hereinafter called Treasury, in violation of its constitutional duty to protect the people's gold, and in violation of its constitutional duty to take care that the laws relative to the safeguarding and custody of said gold be faithfully executed, has failed so to do, in that between January 1, 1961 and January 1, 1974, prior and subsequent thereto, Treasury engaged itself through its officers, agents, and in concert with others in America's corridors of financial power, in a course of conduct or plan designed to convert unto themselves the people's gold entrusted to it for safekeeping, for the avowed purpose of profit and unjust enrichment, and in a course of conduct or plan designed to cover up, conceal, and protect those responsible, and to conceal the existence and scope of other unlawful covert activities. The means used to implement this conduct or plan have included one or more of the following. One, Treasury has failed to render a true account of the amount of gold shipped out from the United States bullion depositories from 1961 to 1968 under color of the London Gold Pool Agreement. Two, Treasury has failed to reveal the true prices, if any, received for the sale of said gold or reveal the names of the ultimate purchasers of said gold. Three, Treasury has failed to give a true account of the amount of gold shipped out of the United States bullion depositories from 1968 to 1974 under color of an ad hoc committee composed of the Chairman of the Federal Reserve Board, the Chairman of the Council of Economic Advisors, the Chairman of the White House Council on International Economic Policy, the Secretary of State, and the Secretary of Treasury, among others. Four, Treasury has issued a statement dated August 31, 1974, purporting to list 24 million ounces of good delivery gold at Fort Knox, when in actual fact, the Secretary of the Treasury admitted December 3, 1974, that such listing is false or misleading. Five, Treasury has taken December 9, 1974, without lawful authority, 2 million ounces of gold from the Exchange Stabilization Fund by a simple bookkeeping device, and 4 days later announced by way of the General Services Administration that there would be an auction of 2 million ounces of gold on an as-is basis January 6, 1975. In addition, a Dutch auction was held June 30, 1975, with the remainder of said gold based on a price not considered best for the taxpayers of America. Six, Treasury has caused a statement to be issued April 11, 1975, which is false or misleading in that it purports to list all of the gold shipments out of Fort Knox, when in actual fact, such list omitted, among other things, a shipment of gold consisting of 4 tractor-trailer loads on January 20, 1965, which shipment consisted of 1.762 million ounces, valued over $61 million at $35 per troy ounce, the par value for official gold at that time. 7. Treasury has in its immediate possession and control the necessary keys, combination numbers, and time control data for the vaults, depositories, and their mechanisms. It thus has the highest duty to take care that its trust be faithfully executed, but it has acted in a manner contrary to its trust and subversive of responsible government, to the great prejudice and to the manifest injury of the people of the United States, by acting in concert with others to aid and abet to surreptitiously remove the gold under the cover of legal right. 8. Treasury has made false or misleading statements for the purpose of deceiving the people of the United States into believing that a thorough and complete inspection and audit have been conducted with respect to allegations that Fort Knox contains no significant amounts of gold and not accounted for, in that an inspection trip to Fort Knox September 23, 1974 revealed one cell-like compartment, number 33, to contain only copper-hued bars. Mrs. Mary Brooks, the director of the Mint Treasury, said, quote, "It's all here," unquote. Her statement is analogous to the so-called audit of October 1974 of only 3 of the cell-like compartments at Fort Knox, which audit caused the report to be submitted to Congress February 10, 1975, also based on a belief that, quote, "It's all here," unquote. Further, the inference given by the inspection trip and the audit was that the gold at Fort Knox was of good delivery form, and the remaining 10 cell-like compartments were full of good delivery gold. 9. Treasury is withholding relevant and material evidence or information from the American people in total disregard or violation of their constitutional right of the people to know what has happened to its gold reserves and to its right of freedom of information for purposes unrelated to national security, the enforcement of laws, or any other lawful functions of Treasury, in that the Central Corps vault at Fort Knox was concealed from the inspection group of over 100 news media people, 6 representatives, and 1 senator of the United States Congress. 10. Treasury has unlawfully utilized its authority to cause the General Accounting Office to fail to take care that the laws be faithfully executed, in that the General Accounting Office, a legislative entity, was forced to have only 2 of its own people on a settlement committee to audit the alleged gold at Fort Knox, whereas Treasury had 13 of its own people on said committee. 11. Treasury has not caused to be made an annual physical inventory of the people's gold since 1953. Thus, Treasury has failed to take care that Title 31 U.S.C. be faithfully executed by failing to make the required annual physical inventories. In all of this and more, Treasury has acted in a manner contrary to its trust and subversive of constitutional government, to the great prejudice of law and justice, and to the manifest injury of the people of the United States. Wherefore, Treasury, through its officers, agents, and others in concert with it, by such conduct or plan, warrants such parties be brought before appropriate legal authorities to answer these charges, and further for the restitution of the people's gold, except that portion which is contaminated by radioactive poison, in which case said party shall be ordered to pay the current market gold price, and for such other appropriate action as may be deemed just and proper in the premises. In support of the charges, please be informed that former Congressman Frank Shelf's affidavit, dated April 7, 1975, in which he deposes and says, among other things, and I quote, that the United States government was moving quietly as a church mouse out of Fort Knox, unquote, and that the gold was, quote, constantly and surreptitiously on the move, unquote. Fort Knox is located in former Congressman Shelf's congressional district. He further deposes and says that, quote, in response to my previous request for gold removal information, Treasury officials have been courteous and most friendly, but always non-committal or evasive, unquote. Mr. Shelf had earlier made the same charges on the floor of the House of Representatives, but to no avail. See Congressional Record, page 15522, August 21, 1963. Further, Lieutenant General John L. Ryan, Jr., United States Army, retired, in his statement of September 26, 1975, before Congressman Otis G. Pike in his office, has proved the existence of the Central Corps revolt and, in fact, has drawn sketches of it. In view of this, there is no valid reason for the Secretary of Treasury to continue to deny the existence of the Central Corps revolt at Fort Knox unless there is something deeply secret stored therein. There admittedly may have been the necessity for some secrecy in the 1960s when all the gold at Fort Knox was stored in the Central Corps revolt. Why this secrecy now? Since the Comptroller General has stated on February 10, 1975, quote, as of June 30, 1974, about 55% of the gold claimed by the Treasury was stored in 13 sealed compartments at the United States Bullion Depository, Fort Knox, Kentucky. As further evidence, we call your attention to the balance sheets of the 12 Federal Reserve Banks, which carry gold certificate accounts as an asset to reflect a stated amount of gold, which in turn is reflected as a liability on Treasury balance sheets. However, it is submitted, these gold certificate accounts reflect assets, gold, which do not in fact exist in Treasury vaults. This same situation prevailed in 1943 relative to silver when, quote, 14,000 tons of silver from the Treasury Reserve backing American paper money was secretly taken from Treasury vaults, although carried publicly on the Treasury balance sheets, unquote. Cited in Tragedy and Hope by Professor Carol Quigley, page 855, 1966, 1974. We could go on, but suffice it to say that Treasury during our 18 months investigations has not moved to refute by evidence the basic charges outlined above. Meanwhile, our economy is suffering by those twin disasters, inflation and deflation, high prices with high unemployment, initially caused by the disposing of our gold reserves in secret and its attendant game plan. Mr. C. Gordon Tether, in his December 11, 1975 article, quote, a new twist of Fort Knox saga, unquote, in the Financial Times of London stated, quote, but whatever the cost in terms of loss of face, might not the United States authorities be well advised to do whatever is necessary to demonstrate that there is no Fort Knox cover-up. In the light of what has happened in the United States during the past few years, deeds inevitably now speak louder than words, and a refusal to prove that they have nothing to hide is inevitably destined to go on fostering precisely the opposite impression. End of quote. Considering all of the above, would you please be so kind as to put the undersigned and Dr. Peter Beter, as you offer to do for Mrs. Barrow, quote, directly in touch with appropriate officials of the United States Justice Department who would have jurisdiction in this matter. Unquote. I am authorized to state that Dr. Beter concurs with the contents of this letter and is fully prepared to give further evidence before a United States grand jury and any congressional investigating committee in confirmation of the charges herein cited, among others. Further, I would suggest you personally bring this letter to the attention of the chairman of the House Banking Committee, of which you are a member, for appropriate action. Failure on your part to do so will lend credence to the fact you yourself have become part and parcel of the cover-up on this vital matter. And failure on the part of the chairman of said committee to take such action will further lend credence to the fact that he himself is in league with those underlying forces at work in America's corridors of financial power. Most respectfully, Edward Durrell. Topic number two. In my audiobook number two, on the Fort Knox gold scandal and what it means to you, I warned you to watch for the stock market crash signal, meaning general unemployment in the range of 20 to 25%. This was originally targeted by the Rockefeller brothers for the fall of 1975, but their schedules have been increasingly upset by their preoccupation with the Fort Knox scandal cover-up and by the anti-CIA actions of Indira Gandhi last summer. Even so, they are working frantically to get the pieces of their plan together again. Here in America, the government officially says that unemployment in November 1975 was 8.3%. But my own confidential information, direct from sources within the Bureau of Labor Statistics, is that the true figure for November was over 15% and still increasing. Therefore, the real unemployment levels are now moving closer and closer to the stock market crash signal levels I revealed nearly a year ago. Meanwhile, the Dow Jones averages lately are streaking upward artificially in a dream world of their own, totally divorced from reality. The stage is being set for a dramatic, visible plunge downward if the Rockefeller brothers cut the cable on the stock market elevator. And New York City, supposedly saved from outright bankruptcy by federal loans, is already far behind in its schedule for raising funds to stay afloat under that loan program. At the same time, the nation's banks are again the subject of widespread concern, and no wonder. Recently, front-page stories have deliberately been planted in major Rockefeller-controlled newspapers about the alleged shakiness of the Mammoth Chase Manhattan Bank and the even larger First National City Bank of New York, both of them Rockefeller-controlled. This is partly an attempt to lower the Rockefeller profile by saying, see, we have problems too. But more importantly, it is a deliberate effort to undermine confidence in our whole banking system. Banks and their customers should therefore watch for trouble. A publication which is doing an outstanding job of keeping on top of the banking situation as well as many other matters is the Daily News Digest, Box 27496, Phoenix, Arizona, 85061. This month's meeting of the International Monetary Fund in Jamaica produced no communique, no general agreement, only reflecting continued confusion there. Pressed by the smoldering Fort Knox scandal on one hand and the imminent war in the Middle East on the other, the primary goal of the Rockefeller brothers has now shifted to just one thing: to abolish the official price of gold in America so that the non-existent American gold hoard can be quietly dropped from Treasury and Federal Reserve balance sheets. Most of the IMF gold is beyond their grasp for the time being. Topic number three. Last summer, Indira Gandhi cracked down on the CIA to stop a Rockefeller takeover of her country, India. Existing war preparations were immediately diverted to a new direction, and since that time, a major new Asian war has been brewing. In my monthly audio letter number 6 2 months ago, I spelled out the basic strategy for this war, including the role to be played by the Middle East conflict in paving the way for the Asian war. plans are proceeding rapidly. A few days ago, Japanese Prime Minister Miki fell into a Soviet trap. Reacting to brusque and uncooperative Soviet treatment, he announced that Japan will sign a treaty with Red China that includes the anti-Soviet hegemony clause desired by China. At the same time, as you may have noticed in news reports, American businessmen are rapidly packing up and leaving Japan, supposedly because their Japanese understudies are now ready to manage things themselves, but actually because the Rockefeller brother interests are bailing out in advance of war, just as happened a few months ago in Lebanon. To set the stage for the big Asian war, hostilities are first to break out in the Middle East to provide an excuse for a limited American nuclear strike to cap off Arab OPEC oil wells. This will result in cementing the Sino-Japanese alliance for war, neutralizing Europe, and producing real suffering there, and causing gas rationing and a major body blow to our wobbly economy here in the United States. The terrorist attack on OPEC oil ministers in Vienna last month, engineered by our own CIA, was supposed to get the ball rolling in all of this. Two key oil ministers were supposed to be killed, leading to escalating reprisals and war. But the job was botched. For bungling this top priority operation, the man in charge, Richard Welch, the CIA station chief in Athens, was judged unreliable and executed by the CIA itself. And now Lebanon, which was primarily a distraction earlier, has now become the new springboard by which the broader Middle East conflict is to be enlarged. All of this, my friends, is part and parcel of so-called détente with Soviet Russia, on the way to a world collectivist dictatorship. Rockefeller Brothers internationalism, which is always portrayed by them as the path to peace, is actually a prescription for war, destruction, and enslavement. To them, it is progress. In December 31, 1975, President Ford said on the eve of our bicentennial year, and I quote, "Liberty is the most precious possession of our past," unquote. But fellow citizens, it is up to us to restore liberty to our future as well. Had we simply been heeding George Washington's wise warning to avoid permanent foreign alliances, the horrors I have been discussing would not exist. In his farewell address, he also left us with many other equally wise observations that have direct application today. Washington's words and example help launch the greatest nation on earth, and they can help get it moving forward again, if we will allow them to. In this, our bicentennial year, I plan to return frequently to the forward-looking sage advice left to us by our great First President. Until next month, this is Dr. Beter. Thank you, and may God bless each and every one of you.